Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For you, the listeners of Book Geeks Uncompromised podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. This week, I'd like to recommend The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón.
Wait. How can wind have shadow?
It just does.
Oh.
It just does, and it works. Magic. It's not a fantasy like we usually read or a science fiction. It's
blasphemy.
Kind of a gothic romance. It starts in the 1940s and spans several decades.
Blasphemy.
It is an absolutely beautiful story.
If it's not fantasy or sci-fi, it's not my book.
It's one of my absolute favorites that's not fantasy or sci-fi. It's an amazing story. It's actually a series, but I have not read the rest of the series.
Whoa.
I've only read that first book.
Very interesting.
Yes, it's absolutely beautiful. So definitely check it out.
Where can you get that free audiobook again?
To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Again, that's audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc for your free audiobook.
Welcome to Book Geeks Uncompromised.
The entire series.
I don't know what it was about this book. I loved it so much.
How do I know more about it than you do? And it's your number
one
book.
I'm bad with names, okay?
Spoilers, gosh.
And we are ready for some reading.
When in doubt, be lame.
Everyone buckle up. Welcome to Book Geeks Uncompromised. I forgot what I was going to say. Where we make reading less solitary. This week we read... Oh, wait. I've got it. Hold on.
Okay.
I've totally got it. Episode... I'm going to say it's a 60-something.
You're right.
Yes. 63. I knew it. I was just playing with you.
Uh-huh.
This week we read Sufficiently Advanced Magic. Not subpar magic. Sufficiently Advanced.
Yes.
It's better. Better than magic. Subpar.
Who's it by?
I want to say his name's Andy.
You're almost... I mean, you are almost right on everything.
I'm so close. Just half a degree off cool. That's... it was written by Andrew Rowe.
Yeah, Sufficiently Advanced Magic by Andrew Rowe.
See, I said that.
We'll talk about it more in a little bit, but it is one of these finalists. Not a semifinalist.
Yes.
A finalist for the Spiffbo competition hosted by Mark Lawrence.
So possibly soon to be award-winning.
Possibly.
Rooting for you. Well, yeah.
So we're recording right now on a Friday night, and I'm going to have an interesting weekend.
Saturday morning.
Okay, yeah, Saturday morning. Yeah, close. It's 1 a.m. now.
It's 1 a.m.
I'm going to have an interesting weekend. My son got the flu. I'm not doing anything this weekend.
That sounds like fun.
So I have made it my own personal mission to see how many books I can read in the next 48 hours.
Oh my gosh. Like, how big of books?
I don't know. Not like average size.
Average size,
yeah,
okay.
Average size.
It's not about the size of the book, right? It's how you use it.
Well, how much you enjoy
how you read it.
How much you enjoy it.
How you read it.
How you... What's wrong with you?
Nothing. Nothing at all. It is not 1 a.m., I promise.
Well, do you have any news stories for us, Greg?
I have the most important news stories that you can ever have. As the self-proclaimed and only Sandersite, Mr. Sanderson updated his blog a little bit, and I just liked some of the details he put out. One, he is finishing the rough draft and first polish of Skyward. Apparently he loves this book and he's excited for feedback soon.
Okay.
Also, he said he had time to polish up and revise Legion 3.
Yay!
Which I'd written last fall. That is also now off with my other publisher being edited.
I wish you would read those. They're really good.
I need
good.
To. Why haven't you put them on the list?
Well, they're just novellas. You can read them in like an hour.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're ebook novellas.
You've probably told me like 20 times.
I'm sure I have.
I would probably fall in love with those like the rest of his stuff.
They're fantastic.
Let me see. I know those two items are the most important since they're both coming out this year. He also says the third Legion story is being published as part of a collection of all three novellas about the character.
Is that going to be like actually in print?
Forming a complete narrative. It should be out August, September... expect a official announcement with cover art to come from the publisher in the next few weeks.
I don't have a print copy of those.
So maybe it sounds like there's an announcement maybe coming up in the next few weeks.
Yay!
I'm not sure if that's about Skyward or about Legion, but There will be some cool announcements coming out soon. One of the big things that stuck out to me is that the final Waxen Wayne Mistborn novel, he will be finishing writing that up in the last quarter of this year. He'll, you know, I don't know if he started writing it, but he said he'll write the final novel end of this year.
I've been underwhelmed with the Waxen Wayne books.
I have,
so
like,
far.
The very first one, Alloy of Law, was great.
It was great, but it wasn't as good as the first trilogy.
The only problem is that it was a trilogy.
Yeah.
I don't think one book could compare to a whole trilogy.
But still,
I did fully enjoy Alloy of Law.
Yeah, I mean, each book individually I've enjoyed. I guess Alloy of Law I've enjoyed the most.
Yeah, definitely.
But I've liked the newest books because I love Steris now. Yeah. And I love loving Steris.
Yeah, but I love Wax and Wayne. I like the characters, but... Yeah, the story's just not there for me.
And, you know, it was the same way with me for the first trilogy. Like, the story wasn't there for me until Hero of Ages. So maybe this last book will pull it all in for me.
See, that was different for me because I was fully in on the first book.
Yeah.
The very first book, Mistborn, I was fully into it and I was in love. So I don't know. We'll see. This series hasn't been terrible, but if Mistborn continues after, I'll be interested to see what he does. If it turned more into a sci-fi.
Yeah,
because it would go a little more futuristic or modern day. I'm not sure. Beyond that, the last thing he says, there is a certain novella I need to write, he says. We're listing that as secret project, and it's not anything you're probably guessing. I'll reveal it when the time is right, but for now, it's not Cosmere, and it's not something I've talked about before.
Why would you say anything?
Because it will make me go insane going, what is it? But it's not, yeah. You know, it's not Way of Kings, it's not Mistborn, so I'm not jumping at the bit for it because those are the ones I'm waiting for, the next Stormlight Archive book. So
yeah,
that is your Sanderson report. Thank you.
Is that going to have to be a segment?
Yeah, Sanderson there you go. Report? Thank you, America. Yeah.
All right. In other news, money launderers are now targeting self-published authors on Amazon.
Interesting.
So some authors on Amazon's self-publishing print book service have had their identities stolen and then used to launder money, according to cybercrime reporter Brian Krebs. The crooks upload phony but expensive paperback titles to the stolen authors' accounts via Amazon's CreateSpace service and then, quote-unquote, buy dozens of books, transferring funds to legitimate bank accounts.
Whoa.
One of the authors that was targeted by these money launderers was Patrick Reams, who has sold books on Amazon about the commodity business, received an annual 1099 tax form from the company claiming he made $24,000 last year.
Ooh.
Reams quickly discovered that someone else had published a book called Lower Days Ahead via CreateSpace under his name and account. The book, filled with nonsensical gibberish, sold for $5 a copy. Amazon said the security of Amazon accounts is one of our highest priorities, and we have policies and security measures in place to help protect them.
Wow.
Whenever we became aware of actions like the ones you described, we take steps to stop them. Huh. But it didn't say what steps.
Well, see, now, you think he would have known, because it sounds like they hacked his account.
Right.
And then used his... Okay, I'll see, I don't
I guess
know how
I would
work.
Be baffled because I don't... I guess it's a print book. But yeah. I would think, okay, somebody's pricing a book through Amazon's CreateSpace service,
yeah.
And they're selling it for $555. Like, nobody's buying a $555 book unless it's a textbook or, like, a rare old copy.
Well, and are they, like, hacking the account, taking his information, and making a new account under his name?
No, they're using that account.
Then how wouldn't he see? Because I imagine I've never used it. I can't say I have. But I've got to imagine there's something where it says, here are your works. And you imagine you'd go, you check those every once in a while.
Unless,
and you'd see, that's not mine.
Unless it had been a few years since he created his own book and it wasn't selling, so he stopped checking it.
Maybe. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I imagine they don't just say, oh, hey, you're a self-published author. I'm going to steal your identity without knowing anything about you or how active you are.
True.
They probably looked and said, okay, it's been here this long.
Yeah.
They probably they maybe hacked in and said, okay, it's been so many years since anybody purchased it.
Yeah.
There's probably not a good chance that this author's
paying attention.
So let's
And obviously
it.
He wasn't. He
obviously
got
not.
Got his tax forms and went, whoa.
Yeah.
I wish I'd gotten that
Stop
much money.
It. Leave the books alone. It's nothing sacred.
Do not touch our books. Or our books will touch you. Wait a minute.
Greg, you should stop going down those.
Oh, like, come on.
Just, no.
You laugh. That's what matters.
It's so awful.
But it's awesome.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting. Like, who'd have thought of that, I guess?
Money laundering through books being used. Criminals. Books being used for terrible things. That never happened.
No. It's never happened. Books are good. They are a force for good.
Most of the time.
Next, a prisoner got a book deal. Now the state wants him to pay for his imprisonment. So Curtis Dawkins, a felon who is serving a life sentence in Michigan for murdering a man during a botched robbery, was offered a $150,000 book deal by Scrivener Publishing House for a collection of short stories that he wrote in prison called The Gray Bar Hotel. Mm-hmm. Mr. Dawkins is directing the money to an education fund for his three children. The Michigan Department of Treasury is seeking 90% of Mr. Dawson's assets, including proceeds from publications, future payments, royalties, and the money that his family puts in his prison account.
Where do they think he owes them that?
I mean, he's serving time for murdering somebody. He can't make money off of it. It's kind of
a thought. True. And I get that. But him writing, like, the prison did nothing. They didn't help him write it. No one sat down and helped him write it. It was his own work. Yeah, I get he's in a correctional facility. He's in prison. But I just don't see it. Like, yeah. I don't necessarily agree with that, because now if it was something like, if he wrote stories about his time in prison, maybe
that's
about
what
the prison.
It sounds like. Yeah, I don't know if it's about his specifically, but it's the Gray Bar Hotel. It is stories about being in prison. I don't know if they're fictional or not, but I think they are. I would imagine they're based on his experiences, though.
No, I don't agree that the state has any right to it. I don't think they do.
I mean, I don't think legally they have any foundation. Obviously, I'm not an attorney, so I have zero
idea. I'm sure
idea.
Someone could point it out.
I guess the fact that he's putting that money towards the education of his children, that makes me say, okay, don't touch it. If it's in a fund specifically for that and it doesn't get used for any other purpose, then I'd say leave it alone. What kind of bothers me, though, is that they're going after any money that his family puts into his prison account.
Yeah.
So, as I understand, that's money that goes to buying things within the prison.
Right, right.
Like, from their stores, a convenience store kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, how can they say that they should take 90% of that when that could come from
somewhere else.
His wife's
paycheck.
You know, it could be a birthday gift or something from a family member. You know, I feel like that shouldn't be included on there, even in the debate at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just don't see why, even if he was just putting it straight into his own personal account, you know, just going into a bank account and getting put away for when he gets out, I still don't see why.
He's not getting out. He's serving life.
Oh, is he serving life?
Yeah.
See, I don't know why the bank deserves it. Or I don't know why the state deserves it.
Why do taxpayers have to pay to, you know, serve him his punishment for the rest of his life? I mean, and that's just a theoretical argument.
I have a whole debate on prisons I could get into, but this isn't a political podcast, about how prisons are dumb.
You murder somebody, you kind of deserve to be punished for that.
No, you do. 100%. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about the politics behind prisons.
Oh,
anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Totally something different. I don't know. I definitely agree. Since it's going to a children's trust fund, they shouldn't touch it. Just let him put it in a trust fund for them that only they can touch, something he can't get a hold of. Yeah, if he was just trying to put it in his own personal prison bank account, okay, I can see something with it. But yeah, since it's going to the children's one, let it go. Just let it go.
All right. Amazon announced that they will be adapting Consider Phlebas, which I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, by E&M Banks.
We generally screw names up, so.
So this one's kind of interesting because a lot of the movie adaptations we get from books is somewhat dystopian. Series is supposed to portray an actually utopian society.
Okay.
It's a science fiction space opera. It was published in 1987. It was the first novel in the Culture series, which revolves around a war that erupts between the highly advanced progressive society, the Culture, and the Edirans. Again, probably butchering the pronunciation, but that is a religious warlike race who are intent on dominating the entire galaxy.
That sounds interesting.
That does sound interesting.
Unfortunately, it's going to Amazon, so I probably won't watch it.
I have Amazon. You can use my Amazon.
Well, and it's not that. It's I can't think of anything that's come out of Amazon, the Amazon shows that I've been like, ooh, I gotta watch that, or I've tried, they're just boring.
Yeah, the only thing I watch on Amazon Prime is the BBC's Pride and Prejudice.
Like, I think it was Amazon, The Man in the High Tower, was that Amazon? I remember trying that and watched like the first episode and going, okay, it had a cool concept, but meh.
Yeah.
Very, very
I
meh.
I think Amazon's still trying to get their Game of Thrones blockbuster TV series.
They're trying. Didn't Amazon win the bid for Lord of the Rings TV show?
Yeah, I think they were talking about, because I remember talking about that a while back.
Yeah, it was
they
a while back.
They were talking about adapting Lord of the Rings.
It was between series. Yeah, it was between Netflix and Amazon. I think Amazon won.
Maybe, yeah.
I think so. So far, Netflix has done better on making its Netflix movies. There's been more Netflix TV shows and movies that I've liked more than the Amazon ones. Well, so.
I feel like the price, I mean, technically Amazon Prime is cheaper than a Netflix subscription, because Netflix subscription is $10 a month, so it's $120 a year. And Amazon Prime subscription is $100 a year, but it's an annual subscription, not a monthly subscription. So it's easy to just say, okay, here's 10 bucks a month.
True.
Where it's a little harder for many people to just say, here's 100 bucks all at once.
That's you. Nope. You know what I do is I have T-Mobile, so I get free Netflix.
Yeah. See? So, yeah.
Suck it.
And nobody just hands out free Amazon Prime.
No, not very often. And that's not me knocking Amazon Prime. Prime itself has a lot of benefits. But I just don't have the trust in Amazon shows like I have with Netflix shows. There has been, like I've said, track record wise, Netflix has had more shows I enjoy than versus what Amazon or any of the others. I think Yahoo, if they're not still doing it. Yahoo had one for a short time.
I didn't even know about that.
I saw like commercials for it here and there, and the shows just did not look interesting. They didn't look like fun. But yeah, any of the other streaming services besides Hulu, and I used Hulu a little bit only because it caught up with TV shows more recently than Netflix did.
I stopped using Hulu when Supernatural, when CW left. The Hulu collective.
Yeah.
So I couldn't watch Supernatural. I did watch The Handmaid's Tale. Handmaid's Tale is really good.
The only thing I'm kind of mad about is How I Met Your Mother isn't on Netflix anymore. It's now exclusively on Hulu.
Oh, really?
Yeah. People and their deals. That's how it works. Yeah. Not book related. Sorry.
No, you're good. Our final news story, and I'm a few weeks behind on this. This was actually earlier in February, but Duluth schools to remove To Kill a Mockingbird and Huckleberry Finn from their curriculum.
I did remember reading somewhere a couple weeks ago about To Kill a Mockingbird being removed.
Yeah, so they'll no longer be required reading in the Duluth school district due to the book's use of a racial slur, a curriculum change supported by the local NAACP chapter. They said they will continue to be available in school libraries and can be optional reading for students, but beginning next school year, they'll be replaced as required reading by other literature that addresses the same topics in 9th and 11th grade English classes.
Okay.
Michael Carey, the district's director of curriculum and instruction, said we felt that we could still teach the same standards and expectations through other novels that didn't require students to feel humiliated or marginalized by the use of racial slurs.
Okay. I mean,
They're not getting rid of the topic. They just want more contemporary books that handle it differently.
Understandable. I can understand that, as long as it's not trying to remove the book completely.
No, they're not banning it. It's still available in the library.
That's okay.
It's on optional reading lists.
Yeah.
It's just not part of the required curriculum.
And as well as, like you said, it was the NAACP. Thank you. I almost said NCAA, and that's sports, college sports. Totally different. It sounds like they had a part in this, which is good, because I know they are, if you don't know, that is a, I don't know how to say it right, that is a African-American.
Yeah, what's it called? The North American Association for Colored People, I think.
So. I think that's right.
I did have to look up what it stood earlier.
I'll just point to you, because I will never say it right. But at first, when you were saying, oh, they're getting, you know, as you continued on, it changed. But at the beginning, it was like, they're getting rid of it just because they say a bad word. That's kind of ridiculous. But it does make sense to go for a more contemporary version that, as long as, like I said, as long as it's sticking with the same theme and they're not trying to remove that theme. Because To Kill a Mockingbird has a great topic, I guess,
it or has a some theme. Good, yeah, themes on
racial issues and things like that. So they're not banning it from the library, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, they're not banning it. It's still part of reading list. I had kind of the same knee-jerk reaction you did when I first heard about it. But the more you read about it, it's like if their local chapter of NAACP is behind okay it. With it. Yeah, yeah, if they can endorse it.
Yeah.
And they're the people more directly affected by it.
Yeah.
Then yeah. All right.
Yeah, 100%. It's still in the library. Kids can go read it if they want to. And it's, while it wasn't my favorite book to read, like I said, the themes in it are good. The ideas in it are good.
It's been so long since I read To Kill a Mockingbird. Honestly don't remember anything about it.
The movie I remember was good. It was a black and white movie. It was actually really good.
Yeah, I never watched it, I don't think.
I think I had to watch it in school at some point.
Yeah, if I did, that's probably when I slept through. I don't remember it at all.
That was before you liked black and white movies.
Yeah. Okay. It was, way back so when. I guess we're moving on to our review.
A book? We're going to talk about a book today.
As we do. So this week, as we said, we read Sufficiently Advanced Magic by Andrew Rowe. Yeah. This book is a finalist for Spiffbo, the self-published fantasy blog-off competition hosted by Mark Lawrence.
Fantasy, okay.
And let's get into what it is about.
Yay.
5 years ago, Corin Cadence's brother entered the Serpent Spire, a colossal tower with ever-shifting rooms, traps, and monsters. Those who survive the Spire's trials return home with an attunement, a mark granting the bearer magical powers. According to legend, those few who reach the top of the tower will be granted a boon by the Spire's goddess. He never returned. Now it's Corin's turn. He's headed to the top floor on a mission to meet the goddess. If he can survive the trials, Corin will earn an attunement, but that won't be sufficient to survive the dangers on the upper levels. For that, he's going to need training, allies, and a lot of ingenuity. The journey won't be easy, but Corin won't stop until he gets his brother back.
See, just from that description, when I first read that, I felt it was very much, it sounds like a video game. Like, it sounds like a climb the tower, solve puzzles, fight the monsters, keep going type of puzzle game. It's not. The book has definitely got more to it than just climb the tower.
Yeah, it was definitely that. It's classified as a lit RPG fantasy lit book.
That was weird to me when you told me that. Yeah. What exactly does that mean?
Literary RPG. So it's supposed to be a book that reads like an RPG.
Huh. Okay. That's a weird concept to me because I think RPG, I think I'm actually playing.
Yeah.
But it's not a interactive.
I've only ever read one before.
Yeah.
And that other one didn't go well for me. So this, it was still kind of a new experience because the other one that I read too was more a LARP rather than like a video game.
Right. Live action role playing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was strange.
Yeah.
But I felt like it kind of stuck to those RPG aspects fairly well.
It did, yeah. I can give you that.
Yeah, so like this said, and you were saying something before we started recording how that description makes it sound like a lot more of the story is going to be taking place in this spire.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be in the tower, I thought it was going to be him meeting people along the way. Like, I didn't think, because it does eventually lead to an academy kind of place. Mm-hmm. And he spends quite a bit of time there because it's kind of like,
I mean, probably 75% of the book is outside of the tower.
Because it starts off with him walking towards the tower and it's kind of introing, he's monologuing, talking about himself, what's going on, da, 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 da. It's like, oh, okay, cool. We're jumping right into it. I like it. Let's get into this tower. The tower was cool. The traps that he went through were cool. And then it's like, okay, and he's out and he's going back home. And it's like, what? Wait, that's a huge tower from the way you described it. Because I know another thing they describe is if you get to the very top of a tower, the goddess that created the tower will give Selyse will give you a boon. Will give you any wish you want, basically, kind of thing. And of course, he wants to find his brother. So I was expecting a whole romp through the tower, which is and I guess maybe I was spoiled by Senlina Sins with that. I didn't expect it to be exactly the same, but I thought it would be more of that kind of adventure. It wasn't a bad thing that it went to the academy. There was a little bit more describe heavy, I think, but
I was kind of relieved when it shifted out of the tower
really
and went to the academy because it was about 10 to 12%, because I was reading on audiobook, so or not on audiobook, I was reading on ebook. So I had the percentage bar down there the whole time. So it was about 10% of the first part of the book was him in the tower.
He's really not in it for long.
No, he's not in it for long. But it started out... It was weird to me to start out with just Corrin by himself going into the tower. Mm-hmm. So we had no setup for the world, no background on Corrin's personality, and I felt like maybe that wasn't the best way to introduce the world and to introduce Corrin, because I felt like it was more an example of those lit RPG aspects, because he went into it and there was, okay, there are these items. He, you know, what do I take? What do I leave?
Right.
Okay, behind that door, oh, there's a monster, but I want to stay away from fighting kind of thing. And I was kind of relieved when we moved out of the tower and we got to set up the world a little bit.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. I can definitely agree with that. We got to understand the world a little bit more because, of course, most fantasy books are series. I was assuming that this first book would be going through the tower and dealing with the challenges of it, and then either midway through this book or most of the way, the next book would lead into more of what was going on in the actual world, that the tower would be your introduction, is what I was thinking. And like I said, I'm not disappointed by it. I was looking forward to that. But it wasn't badly done is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
I liked the academy, and I did like parts of it. Like I said, I think it got a little describe heavy when he tried to go into the magic system.
Yeah, so that's something to talk about. So the magic system, like I talked about, you go through the tower a little ways at least, and
see how far you can go. Basically.
See how far you can go. If you get to a certain point, then you're granted an attunement, and the attunement
ultimate power.
It doesn't seem very clear on how. It's decided. Is it just random?
The goddess decides? I don't know if it's random. It may have been a goddess decision. It may be something that's unlocked inside of you.
Okay.
Kind of thing. I think it, because they do talk about the whole magic system is run through mana, which is inside of you, and you have a limited amount of supply. I guess if you rest, it refills.
Mm-hmm.
But even before you get an attunement, you can use mana, because he talks about how he did dueling canes with his dad, and he was able to, you can use, put mana using it through your hands, to use dueling canes. And, I want to say, I think it's something unlocked inside, but I think the goddess chooses as well. Cause I don't know. It's never really explained. It's just kind of, this person got this attunement.
And if it's random, that's fine.
That's fine.
That's not bad. But yeah, where you get your mark, it decides kind of your speciality within your attunement as well. You know, if it's on your head, then you're supposed to use more mind magic. If it's on your heart, you're supposed to use more heart magic. Your hands, more arm magic. I don't know.
Hand magic. It's hand wavy.
Whoa, I see what you did Ba-do-do. There. Yeah. It's an incredibly involved and detailed magic system.
Yeah, which is cool.
But I felt like we got every single note that Andrew Rowe wrote down about this magic system. And in world building, less is more sometimes.
Oh, 100%. Give me a piece of it. Give me a small piece of it. Just kind of... And I think one of the ways I would have liked it better is if it had been introduced... during fights, or if it'd been introduced like bit by bit. I'm not saying everything needed to be that way. Do a little explanation on his own, because of his own power that he got, that Corrin, pronounce that right?
Yeah,
I got it right. His own power that he got, I wouldn't mind doing a little explaining on that, just because it's him working through it. But some of the more physical attunements, more of the fighting combat attunements, I would have rather seen more of those. Like, they had a kind of dodgeball session.
Yeah, they were learning to deflect.
Like, during some of those, show someone doing something and Corrin going, okay, I read about that. They must be this. I have to do this. You know, that kind of in the moment learning, oh, that's a cool power that person just used. This is how they used it. Instead of, it kind of got textbooky at times where it was like, so these are the powers. Not all the time, but every once in a while.
There was like a history lesson in one, too.
Yeah.
And I felt like, honestly, this book could have been probably 50 to 100 pages shorter.
Yeah.
By condensing a lot of the info dumps on the magic system. And I knew that this book had some info dumps going into it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize how many it was, though.
Quite a few. And I'm not a writer in any way any way, shape, or form. I mean, Danny edits every report.
Review.
Thank you. See, that's why I'm not a writer. But I do remember something from a long, long time ago in high school. I remember in English class them saying, you know, show it, don't tell it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think would have made the magic system not as boring to me. If I'd seen more of it in action versus him talking about it.
Well, and that's the thing is, I think that a lot of those conversations, for the most part, did come into play later. The information you were given did end up coming into play in a lot of the actual sequences. I think it could have been condensed a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, I don't think any of it was useless. Like, all the information was used eventually. But yeah, definitely condensed. Condensed would have been a lot better.
Yeah. There were a few conversations that lasted a little bit longer than I think they should have. But they also kind of made me chuckle a little bit just because they went back to that RPG aspect and it sounded like, you know, the monologue in my head when I'm playing a video game and I'm trying to decide what I need to go grind for to get these next items and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
It sounded like that. So if they hadn't lasted as long as they did, I think I'd have really enjoyed that a lot more.
Yeah. There was a monster he fought at one point that was a Spire Guardian was what it was called. It made me immediately think of one of the bosses from Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. Multiple arms, golem looking thing.
Oh yeah,
made me instantly think of that. I was like, that's cool. That's not what the author was going for, but that's what it made me think
there
of.
Was a lot of stuff like that. Like, there was a lot of, you know, this item can take so many hits from this monster, right. You know, these items do these abilities and these other items are better because they have a similar effect, but there's this thing that it does a little bit better. There were various swords and weapons. There was, you know, some teamwork and stuff that was involved.
Very explain heavy.
It was very explain heavy, but when it got into actual story, I felt like the story was really good.
Yeah, the world is interesting in that, I know there's different countries. They all have their own different towers.
Yeah.
And that sometimes the countries, I know there's a country, I think it was a country to their south that was
Idria.
Like, yeah, Idria was Idria. Bringing up an army.
Yes.
I mean, you get to see some of the, what they were called, visages, like these, the servants of the goddess kind of thing.
Yeah, they're pretty much basically gods themselves.
They are pretty much gods, because I remember when Corrin, it's very early on, he meets one and he's just like, oh my god, whatever you want, yes sir, starts bowing. So, I mean, the world, like you said, the world is interesting. I want to know more about these different countries and the, you know, the armies that are coming and
the world, the story that's presented.
Imagine
once you get into it, it's really good.
Imagine a battlefield of these Atun going at each other, like just magic flying and all these, because it's everybody has it pretty much. Because if you go into
lot of people have it, not everybody.
I think people do come out of the tower without it sometimes. Like I think they could. No, is it? I can't remember.
I don't think so. You either come out with an attunement or you don't come out.
I think so. Comparatively to like Plague of Giants, where I said I wouldn't try for it.
Oh right.
What I'm saying is, comparatively to Plague of Giants, I would try for this one.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't try and Plague of Giants because it's literally chance.
Yeah.
This one actually has a little bit of skill to it, and you can actually kind of have a chance.
Yeah.
So this one I'd actually try for. I'd go in the tower.
Okay.
Yeah.
You would go.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would.
I think I would.
I'd consider it.
It would be. I think it'd be interesting.
Make it like a Hunger Games thing where there are cameras everywhere so I can just watch you go through
there
it.
You go. Watch me get murdered.
Yes.
Well, it was good knowing him.
Yep. Now, going into the Academy thing, I don't know if you saw this, but there was kind of a focus on Corrin only has this much money, but he needs to get these items for this. And I was like, are we reading Name of the Wind? Is that what we're doing?
It kind of is. It kind of is that book that I won't say because I always
you
get
always
the name
butcher
wrong.
The name.
I do.
We were joking about that before the podcast.
We were.
and that wasn't really a negative on it for me. It wasn't even different because Name of the Wind did it.
Yeah, true.
But it kind of stood out to me a little bit.
I have to say, one of the things talking about this world I like is, and I'm, again, terrible with names, but the teacher that he had to bring information to.
Is that Ordin? I'm pretty sure it was Ordin.
I think it was Ordin. Some of the magic, I believe that was a she, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Some of the magic she displayed was really cool. Like, she takes him to a secret room. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a room where it's completely soundproof. Like, she says a couple magic words and says, take me there. And whoo, they're in this all-white room. And she's like, okay, say whatever you want.
Yeah,
no one's listening.
Completely private.
I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I liked a lot of the magic. And
the combat magic. Yeah.
The attunement that Corrin ends up getting is not useful in combat.
No,
at all, but he's still convinced that he's going to be useful in combat.
I'm gonna be amazing.
So he's, you know, kind of trying to think his way out of all these combat situations that he's at a distinct disadvantage in. So that was an interesting dynamic.
Well, and what was really interesting about him was, and I always thought it was kind of weird, it kind of was, and the weird is the best word I could think for it, is he seemed very much, okay, I have to stay away from combat. I'm not combat great. I'm more better with my smarts. I've got to stay away from combat. But then when it came time for combat, he actually was not bad.
Well, like, he had trained in combat
His father had trained him a whole bunch. But it was just, and maybe it was just my way of seeing it, and it was weird to me. But it felt very much like, no, I can't do combat. I'm not good at it. And then it's like, oh, I'm a super badass. Flip around. Throw this.
I noticed that the first time he was in the Spire, like at the very beginning, he was talking about, oh, well, I've trained for this so much, but there's a room with a monster. I'm not going to go in that room.
Right.
Because I want to stay away from fights. Where that it did to me there. But once he got into the school and the academy where he was at a disadvantage with all of these other students they did have attunements that were useful in combat. It made sense.
Especially his first combat class. The teacher's like, no, I don't like your type. Get out of here. He's like, let me prove it. Okay, giant fireball. Slight.
Yeah.
But it was definitely, I think, a little weird to me. Maybe a little off-putting because you're constantly reminded of, I'm not combat great, I need help.
But I'm
going to do all these cool combat things and learn how to do something cool in this mode. Yeah.
I noticed that, but it didn't bother me too much. What bothered me about Corrin, and I wish I could have hit the backspace button a bunch on some of these, was with like almost every time they had one of these info dump conversations.
Yeah.
It would end, or at some point towards the end, Corrin would say something, I need to be better at that. I need to research this. I need to experiment with this. Every damn time.
We got it. You need to learn more.
You know nothing.
You're out of school.
You know nothing, Corrin Cadence. I don't know. Because it was every single one of those info dump scenes. It's like, the information's there.
Yeah.
We can move
on. We got it. You don't have to say.
You can bring it up later on.
It's like writing a report and saying, I think, we know you think. You're writing the report.
Exactly.
You don't have to say it. We know it. That kind of thing. So, yeah, he was weird. He wasn't terrible. Like, I liked him as a character. He wasn't horrible.
I think if I could just ignore all the, I need to be better about this, I did like him.
Now, I do wonder something, because he was, for lack of a better term, he was kind of generic.
He was kind of generic.
And I wonder, because this is a RPG, you know, literature RPG, you know, and maybe I'm wrong and I'm thinking too much into this, but a lot of video games, the main character is sometimes made generic so that the person playing can see themselves in it. Do you think Corrin is made somewhat generic? Because he does have a personality. It's not that he's a piece of wood, but do you think he's made a little bit kind of everyman so that whoever reading can sympathize, can fit into that role better?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because there's a suggestion that he's also gay.
True.
So I mean, and I'm not saying that's bad.
No,
I am not saying that's bad.
But that dashes the generic theory.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
I think in a lot of other ways he is very generic. Mm-hmm. But with that, I don't think it was on purpose.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. And like I said, maybe I'm reading into it just a little too much. But okay.
And with that, you know, a gaming character, it's something that kind of comes into play later in the story. I liked the way it was handled in this one. It wasn't a coming out of the closet kind of story. It was just a Corrin questioning whether he could be involved with anyone or this person specifically.
Oh yeah.
So I liked that. I like I think that those coming out stories are absolutely valuable, and they absolutely are necessary. Oh, yeah. You know, 100%. I like reading them.
Yeah.
But I also like in fantasy how authors are also able to completely normalize.
Yeah.
Homosexuality.
Oh, 100%. So they don't, it's not a character defining aspect.
Well, it's not a character defining aspect, but it's also just, hey, it's a thing. It's and a thing. Nobody's going to say, you know, the way that Corin never went, oh, but should I like another boy? It was more, could I like this person? Could I be attracted to this specific person?
I think
that tells me that there's no cultural or societal taboo about LGBT.
Yeah, and I think one example of not necessarily done wrong, but maybe not done as subtly or as normally is example of Nico in the Percy Jackson yeah. Heroes of Olympus series is it almost kind of becomes not a character defining thing when later on in the books he admits that, but it does kind of overshadow a lot of his story because of the way it's brought out. It's very much a in the midst of a...
It's kind yeah. of forced in, it whereas... Is. In Sufficiently Advanced Magic, yeah. the character that Corin kind of gets involved with...
It makes sense.
It makes sense. Like, their relationship makes sense for that.
Right,
it's,
right.
Their relationship is established before that comes up.
And it's not just the author going, look, I'm modern, you know, yeah. that kind of thing. Yeah. It's normal. It's a part of life like the way it should be.
Yeah. And also, I guess, going on to other characters, yeah. there's only one other character... That I really specifically wanted to bring up. She annoyed me. And that was Sarah.
Why did she annoy you?
She just, with the whole, make sure you consult me about things that pertain to me. And it's like, okay, when you're talking about her love life,
yeah,
fine. But when you're talking about government level secrets that you could literally be killed for knowing about.
Right.
Just shut up. Just sit down. Just sit well, down.
And at the same time.
He tells her. She tells him that he's inconsiderate for not telling her. Like
this world-ending stuff that if you'd told me, I probably would have been murdered by the government.
How inconsiderate of you. How
dare you. Well, I do find one thing kind of weird with their complacency with each other or how much they get along while they're at the academy is because they are kind of competing for kind of the... I guess not necessarily his dad's affection, but
I don't think his dad has any affection.
No, his dad has none. I don't know how his mother loved him. that sounds horrible.
Sounds
but
like she doesn't have much affection.
Yeah,
either.
She really doesn't. But they're kind of competing in a way, and it's I don't know it, when they're in the academy with each other, because at the end of it, he's gonna pick one of them, and it's just I don't know. They seem too close. They seem like. For what is going to happen at the end, they just seem a little too friendlier than I think they should be.
From Corin's perspective, I don't think he cares so much what his dad thinks.
True.
But from Sarah's...
For sure.
I think that I would see more hostility from her. Because
especially at the beginning, she kind of was. Like, yeah. The very first scene you're introduced to her, because Corin's like, hey, and she's very like, You know,
and then they have like one civil conversation and they're cool. Also, and she kind of forgets about it all.
Yeah, and then he calls on her one time and she's like, yep, I'm here. And it's like, what? Wait a minute. Yeah. So it's a little weird.
Yeah.
And maybe, like I said, maybe that's nitpicking, but it's just...
Sarah annoyed me. I kind of wondered if this was another case of an author not really knowing how to write a female character.
Maybe.
Because while there was Ordin... And Vera were the only other female characters. And Ordin's a teacher, wow. So...
Yeah.
Ordin's a teacher, well, so...
And I can't remember her name, but she's in the combat class.
Marissa.
Marissa. There is Marissa.
Okay, like yeah, Marissa. There is Marissa.
Marissa's well done.
Marissa, okay, yeah, I'll give you that. I was going to say, you know, an author not knowing how to write a female character, but Marissa's so better
maybe,
done.
Maybe Sarah's just a not well-written
yeah,
character.
Yeah, maybe me and Sarah just don't get along.
Yeah. No, I can agree. She definitely felt off, like I said, with the... There's kind of a competition thing going on there. She was a little too friendly.
She was a little too friendly with that, but then too hostile on other things.
True. Like government-level secrets.
Yes.
So other than that, there is a whole cast of characters that all have their ups and downs. They're not bad, per
they're,
se.
They're not bad, but I hope that in future books they get fleshed out a little more. Some of them did towards the end of the book, especially Jen.
Right, Jen.
Yeah. I like Jen a lot.
He's pretty cool.
He's probably my favorite character.
I can agree with that, yeah.
I also want to see more of Patrick.
Yeah,
Patrick definitely. Is another friend that Corin had growing up that we see a little bit of him, but He doesn't really get developed very much.
No, he doesn't. So I hope there is more later on.
Mm-hmm. While reading it, the info dumps are a killer. They are probably the only really, truly negative thing other than Sarah annoying me.
Yeah.
That I have about this book, but it's a huge thing.
Yeah, if there weren't the info dumps, I would have enjoyed this a lot more. Because the world is interesting. The problems and the secrets that Corin finds are interesting, and I want to know what's going to happen. It's like I said, actually, that's the perfect word for it. Interesting. I'm definitely interested. Just cut out the info dumps, or at least shrink them, make them smaller.
I was texting a friend of mine that's already read this book that wasn't so crazy about it. They thought it was fun, but doesn't understand the hype about it. And I was talking to him, partway through reading the book, where I was kind of venting, like, oh my gosh, these info dumps, and oh my gosh, can Corin stop saying I need to research this some more? But like towards the end, I ended up like really getting into it.
Yeah, the ending was
the last like 30-35%.
Yeah.
It got really good. And there were good parts throughout the rest of the book for sure.
Oh yeah, there's parts throughout, but by that point you're talking about the last 30%, we've gotten past the info dumps.
For the most part.
They're still sprinkled throughout like candy, but
very not, bitter candy.
Very
black licorice.
Ah, that's what I was about to say. Some terrible candy like black licorice. You look at it and go, that might be okay. And then you take a bite and go, why? but it's definitely when it actually gets to the story, it's a good time.
Yeah, it really is. So I'm kind of conflicted on this because I was really frustrated with it for parts of reading it, and then at the end I'm like, wow, I really liked that, I want more.
I want to say at the and I'll have to double check, but I want to say there was something I saw about this like movie rights being sold.
Oh really?
I think I'd have to double check. I could be completely wrong. So don't quote me on that. I'll have to look it up. I'm not saying.
I don't
know how
I'd feel about that. Maybe a TV series. Maybe I don't think a movie would really.
Maybe a TV series cut out the info dumps.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do not need like 30 minutes of somebody standing there explaining something.
It's literally just Corin holding a book going, all right, here we go, guys. Chapter 1. What your ability and you mean together. Or what to expect with your first ability. Like what to expect when you're expecting.
Oh, gosh.
But talking about the arcane powers. That's literally it. The camera's just on him and he's smiling. This is great. I'm going to have to research this.
Do you have any other comments about the book in general, or would you like to rate it?
I thoroughly, like I said, when we get to the story, it's great. The combat is fun. The combat is interesting. The powers are really cool done, because I think that at one point he says there are at least 50 known. I think there's more than that, mm-hmm. like known different attunements. And people can mix and match. Like if you can get more attunements the more times you go back to the tower,
right,
that kind of thing.
You can have multiple attunements.
You can have multiple. So combat gets really cool with the different types of attunements, and you can mix and match. It's not just there's 5 powers and you can have one of the 5.
Right.
There's a huge, huge list of all the powers you can do.
It's obviously very much thought out.
Yeah. I think minus the info dumps, this would have been a very, very strong 9 for me.
Okay.
With the info dumps making it slow, it drops it down to like a 7, a low 7.
Yeah, it's kind of where I'm kind of at like a 6.5.
Yeah, the info dumps killed it for me.
I'm going to go with a 7. I'm going to end up going with a 7.
Like I said, I'm a 7 trying not to fall into a 6.
Yeah, I think it's deserving of the 7 because, like we've talked about, the story is really good once
it's
you get
cool.
to it.
Yeah, it's
and like, now that I'm finished with it and I'm past all those info dumps, like, I can look back and say, wow, that was a good story.
Fun. Yeah.
That was a fun story.
Woohoo.
Okay.
But review over.
Review. I'm going to make a sound bite for that, Greg.
There you go. Sounds good. So anytime we finish it, it'll say that. You need to get that. You need to get When in Doubt, Be Lame.
Yes.
We need that. Or anytime I screw up on an intro, just have
not have When in Doubt, Be Lame in our intro music?
I need that. I'm adding that.
That might be on this week's. People are going to be like, what are you talking about? It was in there.
It was totally in there. Yeah, you're crazy. I already heard it.
This is why.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So, yeah, if this sounds like something that you're interested in, go check it out. Yep. There will be a link on the show notes as well as in our Monday review for this book to go to Amazon and check it out, because I believe it's self-published through Amazon. I will double check if it's available through Barnes & Noble or Book Depository. If it is, there will also be links on there. And it, we didn't note, it is on audiobook, so that could be your free trial book for your Audible, too.
It could be. And it was not bad. The narrator was good. He was fine.
The narrator kind of sounded like a teenage boy at times.
He did well.
So he did well. Yeah. I mean, not annoyingly so.
No, not an annoying teenage boy. And it's not a Star Wars book, so you don't have to worry about noise in the background. Yeah. God, Star Wars, come on.
Next week, we are going to be reading A Time of Dread. Woo-hoo. By John Gwynn, which is the first book in his new series. And I'm really looking forward to that because I finished the Faithful and the Fallen series and you only read Malice.
And I didn't care for it.
Yeah, you weren't really into it. So I'm interested to see this discussion, how it compares to Malice, and also interested to see how much you're able to pick up on not having finished the first series.
Right. I'm just constantly texting you, who's this? Who's that? Wait, who's that guy again? I never met that guy.
So that's what I'm saying. It'll be interesting to see how well it does with presenting the world in the sequel series.
Yeah, it'll be pretty interesting to see how it is.
Yes, definitely looking forward to that. So watch out for A Time of Dread next week. If you have any more comments on sufficiently advanced magic, definitely let us know.
Yep.
You can find us on Facebook at Two Book Geeks UNC, Twitter at Book Geeks UNC, Instagram at Book Geeks Uncompromised. Or you can email us at bookgeeksunc@gmail.com.
Don't forget to rate us on iTunes and any of your podcast apps that you use. And also tweet Andrew Rowe and let him know that you loved our review and that he should talk to us because we like talking to people.
Yeah, sure.
Not Why interview, not? Just talk Why to not? Us. I just want, just, him, to, I just want him to tweet me and say hi. That's it.
You just want friends.
Maybe. And that ends this very, very sad podcast.
Everybody have a great week. We will see you next time.
Books are good.